Welcome to BNN Tax Snacks, a podcast from Baker Newman & Noyes covering timely and impactful federal and state tax developments affecting our clients, friends, and other listeners. I'm Mike Stillings, Director of Tax Services at BNN. Thankfully, 2020 is behind us. In the tax world, however, the impact of last year will be felt for quite some time. In the next several episodes of BNN Tax Snacks, you'll hear from a few of our tax specialists about business and tax topics directly related to the COVID-19 pandemic, the tax law changes it set in motion, and what those changes mean to individual taxpayers as well as businesses. Suffice it to say, we've got a lot to cover, so let's talk taxes.
Hi, listeners. I'm Josh LaPierre, and today I'm joined with my colleague, John Hadwin. In today's episode, we're going to discuss pass-through businesses, S-corporations, partnerships, sole proprietors, the tax planning and considerations surrounding them. Toward the end of the podcast, we'll discuss the potential impact of the Biden proposals at a high level. John, is there anything you'd like to add before we get started?
Thanks, Josh. A lot has happened in the recent years and even this year that has added many items in deciding what type of pass-through entity choice is really your best option. Along with recent legislation and potential future legislation, annual tax planning is as important as ever.
Great. I would agree with that. Tax planning is always important and fun. So let's get started. John, can you get us started by quickly sharing a summary of the major differences of tax treatment between S-corporations and partnerships?
Certainly, Josh. For this podcast, we're going to mostly focus on S-corps, partnerships, also applies to businesses reported on Schedule C and Schedule E. An S-corp is a corporate structure. It has the flow-through treatment of income and deductions, so it means that all of the income and deductions get reported on the individual's tax return, and they're the ones paying the tax versus the corporation paying the tax on behalf of the owners. One limitation on an S-corp is, you know, they must be pro rata for distributions and income allocations, and then they limit the type of owners and the amount of owners that can be, you know, shareholders of the corporation. Generally, there's a single layer of taxation. There's other sting taxes that can be applicable, but not really don't have time in this podcast to talk about them. And, you know, if you're active in the S-corp, you need to pay yourself a reasonable compensation. You can't pull all of the cash out of the corporation as distributions. Partnership is generally two or more parties together under state law. Most frequently, we see these as LLCs, although you can have, you know, general partnerships, limited liability partnerships, and there's a whole slew of other acronyms I don't want to cover for this. You know, all generally, you know, the income flows through to the partners and they're the ones paying the tax on it. Partnerships give you more flexibility with allocations. You can, you know, design a operating agreement, LLC agreement to allocate income in a variety of ways, and it can be extremely complex. Owners, you know, take out their compensation via guaranteed payments, or if you want to maximize the 199A deduction, maybe you consider a preferred return of capital. Again, lots of flexibility with allocating income and taking distributions out of a partnership. One thing I do want to highlight, and we'll talk about in more detail later on, is the IRS has some complex partnership audit rules. And it also comes into play when you're amending partnership returns. This change is relatively recent and started with the 2018 tax filings, where, you know, the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015, and we're going to refer to this as the BBA, created these audit rules, which will assess, you know, tax at the partnership level if the IRS finds any changes not in your favor.
Yeah, that's good to note. Actually, the IRS at a national tax conference just recently, maybe 2 weeks ago, did comment that any part, you know, that partnerships are something that will be increased in the audit side. And just from what's happened the last few years, and as you noted, how much easier it could be to collect any taxes under the BBA, I believe the increased audits of partnerships will be focused for ones that are in the BBA. And that's just my opinion. But
no, I agree. And I've been kind of foreseeing this for the last couple years where, you know, having, you know, the default of the partnership paying the tax at the highest rate and some of these TCJA changes that came through, I think it, you know, the IRS could use this as a tool to certainly raise more revenue.
John, I hear there's a change in the capital account reporting on Schedules K-1 that partners receive from the partnership. Could you elaborate on that and what may be important for partners to look out for?
Certainly. And this is something that's been on the IRS's radar for the last couple years, and they've, you know, delayed the, you know, reporting requirements. So really the premise of it is they want the capital account reconciliation on the K-1 to represent a partner's tax basis. And, you know, there's different methods you can port a partner's capital account on. And for some partnerships, I mean, they haven't been reporting it on a tax basis. They've been using 704B book. They've been using GAAP. They've been using, you know, other methods. And so now on the 2020 K-1s, they're going to have to convert everything over to a tax basis. And for the last couple of years, you know, practitioners have been updating capital account schedules to comply with this. And in the event that, you know, a partner did have a negative tax basis capital account, you would need to disclose that on the K-1. So in some instances, the information's already been reporting it. But I mean, for some partners that are used to seeing, you know, their K-1s on a GAAP basis and what the book value of their capital account is, it's going to be a big change. They're going to have to look elsewhere to get that information. But I mean, that's going to be a substantial change for partnerships. So if that hasn't already been communicated to investors, it might be good to start doing that now. So it's not a big, you know, shock when they get the K-1. Why did my capital account decrease or increase? Maybe save a question as opposed to having it come, you know, right up against the tax deadline.
Great, thanks. And there's no threshold on that. Like, you have to be a large partnership or, you know, above a certain threshold, or is that all partnerships?
Typically, that's all partnerships. There is a small partnership exception. I believe it's if your, you know, gross assets are under $250,000, you don't need to comply with that. But as the partnership grows, I think it's a best practice just to put that information on the K-1s. And, you know, in prior years, typically, it would only need to be a negative tax basis capital. Now it's for all partners, whether it's negative or positive. So Josh, why don't we just kind of go into the TCJA reminders as we gear up towards year-end planning and our annual tax compliance?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. So TCJA, or the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that was signed into law at the end of 2017 by the president, you know, did have a lot of taxpayer-friendly items that still are around. Some items will sunset in the future in 2025 or earlier or later, depending on future congressional action. But we have a lot that come into play now. And one item is, for anyone that has equipment, furniture, fixtures, is the bonus depreciation. And right now in 2020, the bonus depreciation is 100% of qualified purchases that are placed in service during 2020. And bonus depreciation is a nice one in the sense that you don't have any limits. If you come into a loss situation for your business, you can, you know, increase your loss actually and maybe potentially create a net operating loss. And we have a podcast that discusses net operating losses if you want to jump over to there and learn about that. Along with that, for some small businesses, there's multiple more limits. The Section 179 limits did increase as part of the tax reform, and those are still there in 2020. The difference between those that may be a consideration is the state level impact. States treat bonus depreciation 179 differently. So that's one reason why to consider one over the other and to look at that. One other item that came into play as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that affected, I think, more people than it was initially anticipated, and it's taxpayer unfriendly, is the 163J, the business interest deduction limitation. And this is generally applicable to large businesses. So it'd be businesses that have greater than $26 million of gross receipts when they look back 3 years. Affiliated groups, you know, if they're related enough, would need to aggregate their receipts, even if they're separate taxpaying entities. And so that came into play. What was the surprise is what's called tax shelters. And that term, most people think that's definitely not me. I'm not a tax shelter. I'm just a business trying to make money. And I had a year where I lost money. Well, unfortunately, the definition of tax shelter under this, you know, is kind of broad. And it says any entity that is a loss and more than 35% of that loss is allocated to a limited partner or a limited entrepreneur would be considered a tax shelter for these business interest deduction purposes. So even if you're a small taxpayer, you know, 10, 15 million, if you're in that loss situation and you have a lot of limited partners in this investment partnership, you may trigger the 163J business interest limitations. So that should be looked at. And I think 2020, it's kind of more prevalent running into the, you know, the year many businesses have had with the shutdowns across the country and such. The next thing to consider is the tax accounting method and the automatic changes that can be filed. As part of tax reform in 2017, they increased the size of the business that may utilize these simpler and sometimes taxpayer-friendly methods. And that limit for this year is $26 million of gross receipts, as I noted for the other one. And you can, instead of using the accrual basis taxpayer, you can use cash basis taxpayer and for picking up your revenue and paying your expenses. And that's one item that it's an automatic change. And if it's, you know, if it's a benefit to your business and your tax year, you may consider making that now in 2020 with your 2020 return. It doesn't have to be made by year end, just considered. And that election is, or that, yeah, that election is made with your 2020 return when you file in the spring or next summer if you extend.
Yeah, Josh, this may be something where if you're used to filing your return in March early, this may be something where you may want to consider extending. And we're going to have another podcast which goes into the benefits, but extending would give you more flexibility and maybe a clearer picture as to what rates are going to do so you can make the best, you know, tax decision for your business.
Great. Good point. Good point. And that kind of goes along the line with the rest. For this higher threshold, there's also certain businesses are exempt from tracking inventory and can expense it for certain materials and supplies. It's not as broad as it sounds in title. The IRS did come out and clarify that, but it's something to consider if you have inventory and you're a small taxpayer. For any taxpayer that has inventory and had done a uniform capitalization calculation, and this just capitalized additional expenses for tax purposes and really was a timing, that threshold has been raised to $26 million, and you can write off all those expenses that have been capitalized throughout the years. And that's not only taxpayer friendly, but time friendly too. So you're not spending time on that every year. And lastly, for anyone that uses the percentage of completion method, you know, this new threshold allows you to, for any long-term contracts, allows you to be exempt from the percentage of completion method prospectively. So that's something to consider if you do those accounting methods. The parking disallowance, taxpayer unfriendly, that is still there and to consider. They did come out with final notice this summer that you should review your calculations from the prior 2 years if this has impacted you. May be more favorable and you'll want to update that calculation. The meals and entertainment changes with tax reform in 2017 going forward were it impacted anyone that had meals or entertainment. You know, so entertainment went from 50% deductible down to 0%. Business meals stayed at 50%, but business meals for the convenience of the employer, you know, providing it for people to continue working late nights or working on site, used to be 100% deductible. As long as all employees were available to take advantage, that is now down to 50% as well. So, and that actually sunsets in 2025 without, you know, unless there's congressional action on that.
Yeah, Josh, the last two items I feel are really important to address, especially if you're a partnership. As I mentioned earlier, the BBA audit regime was effective for January 1st, 2018, and they made this switch to really simplify the audit process. Just think about it conceptually. If you had a 50-person partnership, if you're the IRS auditing the partnership, you'd need to go and collect the tax from the 50 partners. Well, now, you know, the default is, you know, if there's an assessment that the IRS makes, the partnership pays the tax at the highest marginal rate. And, you know, they can go after anything. And, you know, parking is a really easy, it may not make sense for a lot of us, but, you know, it's easy for an IRS agent to go through and do you have parking? Did you do it properly? And that's one adjustment that they could target. They could also go after meals and entertainment. And those two items are a lot easier to look at than the at-risk basis passive activity loss rules that you may have to consider at the partner level. So again, really important that, you know, you don't ignore those the parking and the meals and entertainment non-deductible computations.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for that, John. And I agree with that. Some of the additional changes were actually enacted in March as part of the CARES Act. And one item that is impacting many businesses is the qualified improvement property. You know, anyone that leases a space and had done a fit up or a renovation to the internal, you know, to the internal aspects, not including the structural components in 2018 or 19, were a bit surprised or may have been surprised to learn that that was required to be depreciated over 39 years. And Congress intended that to be a 15-year life, which would have qualified for the 100% bonus depreciation. So a great, essentially writing it off all up front. But it was, you know, an error in the drafting. It was over 39 years. The CARES Act came in March and corrected that and said, here's the correct terminology in the language. This will be 15 years now. And it is retroactive. So you can look back your 18 and 19 years if you had any renovations to the internal of a commercial building and potentially amend those 18 or 19 years to get the expense then, or you can kind of true it all up and take it on your 2020 return with a accounting method change, an automatic accounting method change. So that's a big one that can play into the your outlook and your year-end tax planning of what you, you know, may owe or your loss situation.
Yeah, one thing to consider, and I've seen this come up, is, you know, if you know, you filed your 2019 return early and you're a partnership and you have a lot of partners, you know, amending can be very problematic, as we talked about. If you're an S corporation, it can be very problematic to amend, because not only are you amending, you know, the corporate return, but you're also amending the number of shareholders individuals return. So, you know, you got to take a look at all the facts and take a look at all the partners and the shareholders' interest and make the best determination as to how you should, you know, treat the KIP adjustment.
Yeah, the administrative burden could be, you know, much more than, you know, much more on amending versus just kind of taking it through this year, and maybe not much of a different impact depending on your business or your owners. I had noted above the business interest limitation that kind of hit a broad stroke of people after tax reform, and that was expanded as part of the CARES Act in March. So they did make that a bit more favorable and increase the limits or the potential limit into the calculation, and we won't get into that, but that's just something to consider when you look at your business profile and your tax profile as you're going into the end of the year and beginning to file next year.
Another really important thing that, you know, to consider is the impact of COVID on your state tax position. Many businesses have employees working remote, and a lot of the states are currently in the process of updating their rules just to determine whether or not you have income tax nexus, franchise tax nexus, whether or not you have to withhold on the employee's behalf. And states are rapidly adjusting to this. I shouldn't say rapidly, slowly adjusting to it, I think is more of the term. But our great SALT team here at BNN is going to have some podcasts to dive into those details more depth and as they come out. And they're always there to write articles on changes. So something to really pay attention to, because state income tax can really sneak up on you. And it's been, states are constantly evolving over the last couple of years after the Wayfair case, and just, you know, doing more e-commerce, just you need to check where you're selling items to make sure you're not subject to, you know, franchise tax. You know, I'm seeing, you know, Washington be more aggressive with their B&O tax and in California. So always, it's not a fun conversation, but it's a really important one to have with your tax advisor.
Yeah,
you know, year-end planning, preparing your tax returns, but anytime through the year, you're always best to be proactive in addressing these issues.
Yeah, great point, John. And that's I've had those conversations multiple times, whether it be from a sales tax, use tax, or an income tax standpoint, or a payroll, you know, standpoint. Like you said, everyone went into work from home mode, and many people are still there if they can. And you know, you may have someone in a state that you've never operated in, and that's what you have to look at. And at some points in the summer, you know, the states were playing catch up. And it was hard for them too. So there was no answers, but many of them are getting around to it and kind of giving, you know, maybe relief or maybe that temporary relief for specific reasons. And some states obviously are impacted greatly by the COVID as well, and they may be going after some of that revenue. So that's a very good point. We've been having those conversations. And like you said, you know, we just reach out to the state and local team as they keep up to date on that, as each state, I think, changes, you know, comes out with more guidance every day.
So yeah, so Josh, we've talked, you know, a lot about, you know, the recent changes, but we did have an election, and maybe we have tax reform 2.0, maybe we don't. I mean, it's all depending on the Georgia runoffs, but there are some pretty significant, you know, changes that the Biden plan has outlaid. And why don't we just, you know, walk through a few of them?
Yeah, some of the important ones. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, and it, you know, as you noted, will we have changes? We don't know. The determination will be on January 5th with the Senate runoffs in Georgia, and whether the Senate becomes tie 50-50 Democrats Republicans or not will to be seen. So, puts us in a position of unknown and uncertainty that it is a bit frustrating for businesses and taxpayers that would be nice to know. But, you know, Biden has released what he would like to do, and you can just look at that and be flexible. And you know, one of the things that is easy to understand and is the he wants to increase the top tax rate. Right now, we have the 37% tax rate. He wants to go to pre-TCJA levels, and that's back up to the 39.6%. He also, many pass-through businesses get the potential of the 20% pass-through deduction, and that lowers your top tax rate a great deal. You know, effectively on a 37% tax rate this year, you could be taxed at 29.6%. Biden wants to limit anyone that makes $400,000 or more to not be able to or to begin phasing out of that deduction. So that is going to be a broad, permanent increase in taxes for those higher taxpayer earners, you know, from 29.6 up to 39.6 potentially. Another item that Biden has proposed is the increase in the capital gains rate. You know, currently the highest capital gains rate is 20% if you're in the top tax bracket, and he would tax those capital gains at the ordinary rate for anyone making more than $1 million. And so under his plan, that would be your, you know, your capital gains that once were at 20% would be at 39.6%. And that's, you know, not even layering on the net investment income tax of 3.8%. Additionally, he wants to expand the Social Security wage base, you know, or the, you know, the self-employment income tax on people. Right now, that's for 2020, any wage earners or active partners in a partnership will pay the Social Security tax on income up to earned income of up to $137,700. For employees, you know, that's 6.2% on your side, 6.2% paid by the employer, 12.4% total. For partners in a partnership or sole proprietors, Schedule Cs, that would be paid by you on your tax return as an owner or partner. Biden wants to allow that to cap out still, but then stop the cap at $400,000. So anyone making more than $400,000 would kind of turn that faucet back on the Social Security tax of 12.4%. So that's another thing that could impact some folks.
So Josh, I mean, this kind of goes into the whole self-employment tax, which catches a lot of people off guard. And there are planning opportunities out there. And, you know, depending on, you know, if this goes through, you may want to discuss, you know, reorganizing and, you know, maybe creating a management company and, you know, pulling out your earned income through the S-Corp as wages to minimize your self-employment tax exposure. So it may also, you know, change your thought process as to what entity, you know, you choose. You know, partnerships, you know, all the earnings of a general partner or managing member, it's all subject to self-employment tax, whereas an S-Corp, you know, any K-1 income isn't subject to it. So this is something definitely want to keep an eye on. And, you know, if it does pass, you know, be prepared to, you know, restructure and be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, it's all about being flexible because of the time of uncertainty, right? I mean, you kind of look at what you have now, and maybe many people revisited some of these aspects with the 2017 tax reform, and now they can just update that for the potential change. Probably one other aspect, you know, I know Biden has a lot of other items out there, but one other important item to note is right now the lifetime exemption for the estate is $11.58 million, and Biden wants to bring that down to, you know, five or 3.5 million, one or the other. We have a series of three podcasts that actually talks about estate and gifting, and it's great by our colleagues, Gene McDevitt, Jim Guarino, and I'd recommend going over and listen to that if you wanted to look, you know, more information on that.
Thanks, Josh. This was a fun discussion as always, even though we're remote. I look forward to chatting with you in the future on future episodes. Any last comments before we say goodbye?
No, just, you know, we talked about a lot. Reach out to your tax advisor, reach out to one of us. Happy to have a conversation and see where you should go from there. But I thank everyone for listening. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of BNN Tax Snacks. I hope you found the discussion helpful and are walking away feeling a bit more informed. Check out our other episodes, which are available at bnncpa.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. See you next time.
This podcast is brought to you by Baker Neuman Noyes. The information contained in this episode is based on data available as of the date of its release. BNN is under no obligation to update this information as changes occur. BNN podcasts, events, and publications are intended to provide general information to our clients and friends. It does not constitute accounting, tax, or legal advice, nor is it intended to convey a thorough treatment of the subject matter. The information in this podcast may or may not apply to your individual situation. Consult a tax professional for help applying these concepts to your personal circumstances. Please contact Baker Neuman Noyes for additional assistance at info@bnncpa.com. More information can be found online at bnncpa.com.